This week, we're thinking about T.C. Boyle, the writer who's been called one of our most American novelists since Mark Twain. He's just come out with his 25th book, a novel called The Harder They Come. It's an exploration of violence in modern America, laced with Boyle's trademark sardonic humor. The book's inspired by actual events, and it follows the lives of three characters: Sten Stenson, a 70-year-old former Marine, his paranoid son, and his son's troubled lover. Doug Gordon wanted to know more.
T.C., you've described writing as your way of deep thinking, so I'm curious, what kinds of deep thinking were you doing while you were writing your new novel, The Harder They Come?
Well, The Harder They Come is sort of my meditation on gun violence in the U.S., but specifically the case of the individual shooter. It seems that every month or so we have this horror inflicted on us in which a young man, usually mentally imbalanced and supplied readily with firearms, takes out his frustrations on strangers. And so I wondered, where is this coming from? Is this inherent in the American character in some way? Is it a genetic predisposition passed down through generations? And so I wrote the novel in order to try to figure out some of this.
And your epigraph from D.H. Lawrence would certainly indicate that it's inherent in the American character, right?
Yes, the essential American soul is hard, isolate, stoic, and a killer. It has never yet melted. This is from Lawrence's studies in classic American literature. Now, of course, he's an Englishman, and this goes back into the 1920s. But I just took the epigraph as a kind of template to work around and to see if that really is true. And so this then suggested to me that I should talk about the pioneers and the mountain men and so on, and try to bring it all the way back to its origins. So there was a time in the U.S. in which a violent individual, a disturbed individual, might be able to take this out in the wilderness or in the days of John Coulter on the Indians as well. Now we don't really have that left much anymore, and I wonder if it's turning inward on us.
And the central question, to focus in a little more closely on the aspect of gun violence that you explore in The Harder They Come, the central question really has to do with why the mentally unstable in our society have access to lethal weapons, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And also why they can't be given help. Now, I delivered this novel in the fall of 2013. Last May, in the town where I live, Santa Barbara, there was a mass shooting by a man, young man, disturbed with guns, very similar to the one I've written about. I didn't happen to be present for that. Again, as with the case, real case, on which I've based this story, the parents in both of these cases tried to intervene and warned the police that their sons were spiraling out of control. But because of privacy laws, once a young man has turned 18, the parents can no longer interfere or have access to his psychiatric records. Nothing was done. What has come out of the Santa Barbara case is a new law in California that in some circumstances would allow police intervention even if the young man has not committed crimes.
There are three central characters in The Harder They Come. Can you tell me about them?
The book begins with another story that I learned from the news, Doug. And this is a story that had some currency maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years ago here in America. A group of senior citizens was on a tour bus in Mexico when they were attacked by three assailants who were intent on robbing them of their passports and their wallets and so on. One of the senior citizens, a 70-year-old man, had been a Vietnam vet. And he reacted instinctively, grabbed one of the assailants, and put him in a chokehold. Eventually, he killed the man with his bare hands, and the other two ran away. Now, this man was regarded as a hero in the U.S. So I begin the book by calling this man Sten Stenson. He is in Costa Rica on a tour, and I use that incident as a way of setting up the idea in this book of, is violence ever, should it ever be condoned? And how can one man be celebrated as a hero when another is reviled for taking out violence on society? And as we progress, we find that his son, Adam, is the schizophrenic who, shortly after this, takes to the woods in Fort Bragg, in Northern California, where this book is set, after shooting two people in a delusion. And because he is a very much a survivalist and a mountain man, he is at large for 5 weeks, evading a manhunt. The third character becomes Adam's girlfriend. Adam is 25, she is 40. Her name is Sarah Havarti Jennings, and she is a member of the Sovereign Citizens Movement, a movement here in the U.S., a right-wing movement that rejects all governmental authority. And as this developed, I began to realize that the book is about a kind of American anti-authoritarianism. And where does it end? Where do we decide to have a society and to negotiate? And when is violence exclusively the only way to settle an issue?
Working the way through the book, have you reached any conclusions or any thoughts to answer the questions?
Well, Doug, I wish I had good answers to that, but I'm not a sociologist and I'm not running for office, although I may one day.
Let's hope so.
Yes, well, thank you. I just like to see the drama in things. So two of these stories came from the news. The news gives us the facts, but what fiction can do uniquely, I think, is to give you insight into the point of view of a given character. So how does it feel? What are they thinking? As far as my conclusions are concerned, the conclusion, I suppose, is the book itself. Another reason why I exclusively write fiction and why I love to be an artist is that I follow the book through in an organic way. I don't have an outline. I don't have an agenda. I allow you to enter into the heads of these characters in the way that I have and make your own determination.
And you do it so well. You really, really get into these various characters, really inhabit them. And I think now would be a great time to have you read an excerpt from The Harder They Come.
All right. The excerpt here that Doug has chosen for me is from Sarah's point of view. She has been on the lam for the law because of a minor incident and has been living with Adam. Now, late at night, with Adam present, she is going to go back to her house in order to reclaim some things that she desperately needs to continue living with him. Underwear, for one thing, dresses, makeup, whatever people would need from their homes. And they are on their way up, and Adam has brought his gun. She hated guns, and she put her foot down, or tried to, because this really was overkill, not to mention a recipe for disaster. But 5 hours later, there they were, following the track of her headlights up the hill on a moonless night, his gun propped between them, not in the trunk, not laid out flat on the floor in the back seat, and a pair of night vision goggles dangling from his neck. He'd drawn two slashes of oil or grease paint or whatever it was under his eyes like the players you'd see on Monday Night Football if you were unlucky enough to be bar hopping in the middle of it. And he was so amped up, he kept talking about the plan, what the plan was, and how they were going to execute it. His word, execute. Look, she told him, leaning into one of the wicked switchbacks that seemed to chase the car all over the road, and she wasn't drunk, not even close, just a little buzzed. It's all in good fun, but that thing isn't loaded, is it? It's not going to go off and blow a hole in the roof or anything. He didn't answer. She'd already extracted a promise from him that he wasn't going to do anything more than just sit there in the car, which she was going to park down the street from the house out of sight, and wait for her. 10 minutes, that was all she was going to need, and he could just sit tight, okay? Was he cool with that? They hadn't seen a single car since they'd turned onto the highway, and that had helped with her blood pressure, which must have been spiking despite the alcohol in her system, because she was regretting ever having mentioned this whole fiasco to him. She should have just waited till he was asleep and snuck up on the road by herself, and he'd never have been the wiser. But she'd wanted some moral support. That was a laugh. It was more like amoral support where he was concerned. And things had sort of ratcheted out of control. He was a boy, playing war games. She could understand that. But this was no toy rifle. And if he saw a cop, anywhere, who could tell what he might do? And what would that make her? Accessory to murder? It was bad enough that the next time a cop stopped her, she was going straight to the county jail. And while she wasn't ready to accept that, or genuflect to the system either, she was still smart enough to stay out of its way as much as possible. You couldn't fight them. Look what had happened to Jerry Kane. She tried to tell him about that, about how the pigs had shot dead one of the gurus of the movement, the foremost, the very man whose seminars she'd attended and had opened her eyes and revolutionized her life, gunned him down in a Walmart parking lot in Arkansas, and his 16-year-old son along with him. But it just seemed to go in one ear and out the other. I said, that thing isn't loaded, right? Because if it is, I'm just going to turn around right here and now. You hear me? His voice, soft as fur, came at her out of the darkness. Jesus, you sound like my mother. But you're not my mother, right? And that got her. That reminded her of what was real, what counted, what she was doing here on this dark road with him. No, baby, she said, softening, and she reached out her hand to him. I'm not your mother. I'm your lover. And when we get home, watch out.
Excellent reading. Thank you so much. In 2000, you said in an interview that there's an unforeseen link between all your stories and novels, a link that's only apparent to you in retrospect, an aggregate that represent a very personal and developing worldview. So I'm wondering, 15 years after you said that, and what, seven novels later, and I don't know how many short stories, what is your worldview like these days?
What I seem to be interested in is our species as in another animal species on this planet and what that means, what we are doing to the planet, how we live in nature, through nature, by nature, as part of nature. How is that divorced from our intellectual or spiritual selves? All of these books, in one way or another, play to that. So, for instance, the subject in The Harder They Come is gun violence. But underneath it, really, is this idea of a release valve, of nature, of living in nature, being part of nature, as Adam is. I'm still searching. Each book and each story seems to add another little brick to this edifice.
That's T.C. Boyle talking with Doug Gordon. Boyle's latest novel is called The Harder They Come.